Welcome to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You know, I know that many of our listeners value alternative and complementary approaches to healthcare, so I wanted to let you know about a new publication, a relatively new publication, called Global Advances in Health and Medicine. And in the spirit of transparency, I want to disclose that I am on the editorial board. It is an unpaid position. I am not paid for this, for being on the editorial board. But nonetheless, I wanted to disclose that. And I wanted to invite one of the co-editors-in-chief to talk with us today about this publication. And so I'm very pleased and honored to have with us Mary Jo Kreitzer, who is the director of the Center for Spirituality and Healing and a professor of nursing at the University of Minnesota and the co-editor-in-chief of this journal. Mary Jo, thanks so much for being with us on
it's
Health Styles.
It's a pleasure to be here, Diana.
And you've been on Health Styles before.
I have.
Yes. So thank you for returning. So this publication, A Global Advances in Health and Medicine, what's the mission of this publication? Why are you doing this publication?
Well, the mission of the publication, Diana, is to improve health and well-being worldwide. And so it really is much more than a journal that focuses on complementary and alternative, or what we now call integrative medicine. So there's definitely a strong interest in exploring those integrative approaches, but we're also very concerned about public health and global health. And we're really drawn to the whole topic of well-being and the worldwide interest there really is in advancing towards more of a well-being orientation.
So why is that so important? How do you see that playing out? Why do we need to focus on well-being when, you know, we're trying to see how we can cure disease?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. And much of the debate during the last healthcare reform, when we were trying to pass legislation, was talking about how we have to move from an orientation of disease to one of health. So we need to go upstream. We need to focus more on prevention. But when you really think about it, Diana, what people are really yearning for in their lives is well-being. Now think about it. I'm sure you know people who have really great health, but they have lousy well-being.
Yes.
And it's because other areas of their life are perhaps not fulfilled or they're challenged. And on the other hand, I bet you can think of people that you know that have really lousy health, but they exude well-being. So there's a lot of science emerging that really looks at a whole person perspective and says that what really influences well-being is not only health, all aspects of health, physical health, emotional health, spiritual health, purpose. Yeah. Purpose is important to well-being. Relationships is critical to well-being. There's more loneliness in this country than there is even depression. Community is really important to well-being. Community in many ways is what nurtures and sustains us. So our social networks and our social connections are important. Safety and security is important to well-being. So anything that erodes safety and security, like fear, really influences well-being. And then lastly, the environment. And so the environment has a huge impact on well-being. And so that's what's fun about this journal, is that our mission being improving health and well-being worldwide, that is really a big scope. So we really invite articles that focus on integrative health and integrative healthcare practices, because we think that's a really good way to advance well-being. But we're also really concerned about public health issues. Like in the issue that just came out in March, there was a really nice article on vision stations.
I loved it. I loved it. Tell our listeners
about
this.
Well, and it was
this.
A way of correcting vision needs with low-cost technologies. And so having impaired vision is a huge way to adversely impact well-being. If people can't see, they can't navigate, they can't work, they don't do well in school. And so this was a really great study on using a real low-cost technology of vision stations that are essentially kiosks that can just be out in the community and to test and then to create corrective lenses. So I think it's a great example of an article that really crosses.
Yeah, I loved that article and was fascinated by it because they talked about glasses, liquid lenses that I didn't even know existed that could be adjusted depending upon what your vision needs are.
Yeah.
So it was fascinating. It was an excellent article.
Yeah.
And I might say that also in the current issue, you referred to people who have major health problems, significant health problems, but have high levels of well-being. And there is an example of that in an article on team-based complementary care that has three cases in it. And in the one case, I think, was that the case? No, I'm sorry. It was a narrative. I take that back. It was a narrative by James Frickton. And he's talking about being a resident and a patient coming in with multiple health problems, but had a high level of functioning, was doing pretty well. And he was just going to not do a lot of, he was not going to do a bunch of tests and procedures, and he wasn't going to prescribe a lot of medications. And he got his coattails pulled by the attending physician, supervising physician, and was told you should be doing these tests and this and that. And it really wasn't what the patient needed or wanted.
Well, that's actually a really interesting viewpoint, and it was by Jason Chertoff.
Oh, I'm sorry, I have it mixed up.
And Jason, the title of it was Another Pill, Another Test, and Another Procedure, One Resident's Reflection on Healthcare Cost Containment. And you're right, Diana, it was really a viewpoint written on the incredible imperative there is in our healthcare system to do more, do more, do more, and charge more, charge more, charge more. And what we're trying to do in the journal that I think is really interesting is at the core of the journal are having very high quality original articles that focus on research. That's what a lot of people expect in a scientific journal. But we're actually adding a number of features. Mm-hmm. And so Jason's, the resident's article was what we call a viewpoint article. So we really want people to write their perspective, mm-hmm. Their point of view, their mm-hmm. opinion. And that's one kind of a viewpoint. The other kind of viewpoint is titled In My Own Words. And one of the things we're really encouraging is for patients and family members to essentially write their own viewpoint in their own words and reflect on, you know, experiences they have in healthcare. So those are a couple of, interesting features. There's some others that you may want to talk about as well.
Well, let's, for a moment, there is a website for the journal. And the website's address is
www.gahmj.com. So Global Advances in Health and Medicine Journal.com.
And so if I was interested in writing in my own words a narrative, a story about my own experience or my own viewpoint, viewpoints on an experience I had with healthcare or any aspect of health and healthcare, I could go to that site and see what is expected and how to submit?
Yeah, but you'd look for the author guidelines.
Okay.
And for each type of article in the journal, there are guidelines that would tell you, for example, how long of an essay to write. And often for those viewpoints, it's about 1,500 words. Uh-huh. So not too long.
Yeah. It's about 5 double-spaced typewritten pages.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. So, Mary Jo Kreitzer, you do work in integrative healthcare, and maybe we should talk a little bit about what that is.
Well, integrative healthcare, so there's a lot of terminology. You mentioned alternative and complementary integrative. And so, you know, it used to be that people would refer to things like acupuncture and aromatherapy and guided imagery as being alternative mm-hmm. therapies, alternative modalities. And the idea really was, Diana, that many people thought is that there's Western healthcare or Western medicine that's evidence, mm-hmm. that's regular, that's normal healthcare, and that this other stuff was alternative, and that, you know, people essentially faced an either or, suspect, unproven, untested, and so that people they had to choose. Mm-hmm. And then the term complementary medicine became popular, and complementary is not spelled with an I, it's not free, but complement to almost like complement Western medicine. So the idea is, again, you have regular care. And so you might have somebody that has, for example, pain, but you can use some of these other modalities to complement or fill in around the edges. And actually, that terminology was problematic because somebody diagnosed, for example, with migraine headaches, it might be that before doing a drug, that it makes more sense to try acupuncture. Several really good studies have been published on acupuncture and safety and efficacy for migraine headaches. So the term became popular probably now, it's almost 15 years ago, integrative. And the idea is it's not alternative either or, it's not complementary, it's bringing it together. And you can almost think of integrative at many levels. That's what patients are, people are yearning for. They want it integrated in their own lives, their own care. Some healthcare providers integrate because they might be an integrative nurse, and in addition to doing sort of what you typically think of nurses doing, they think about how can I bring this to the bedside so that if they have a patient that's nauseated, for example. So instead of choosing the drug to manage the nausea, they might say, let's try a little breath relaxation. Let's try some aromatherapy, some gingerman or peppermint, or let's try some acupressure, which can also be very effective. Then the last term is integrative healthcare. So integrative healthcare, I think, is what we all would really love to see, which would be healthcare that would pull together from the best of healing traditions and make it available to patients.
And in fact, there was a bit of a debate that nurses were very much a part of when it was called integrative medicine. And I understand that there is now a new National Center of Integrative Healthcare. Do I have the name?
Yeah, it's the National Center for Integrative Health and Medicine.
I didn't think medicine was in the title, is it?
Complementary and Integrative Health at the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health. So they didn't lose the word complementary. Mm-hmm. Which was really important to some of the complementary care providers. They wanted that to be retained. But I actually can even tell you, Diana, at about the moment that that began to shift, I was participating in an Institute of Medicine gathering in Washington, D.C., and the title of it was Integrative Health and the Health of the Public. And so I had presented a paper there and participated in a panel, and it was at that particular gathering, which was one of the largest gatherings the Institute of Medicine has ever held, that there was a lot of discussion around needing to shift the language from integrative medicine to integrative health.
Yes. And my co-producer, co-moderator, Barbara Glickstein, I believe, spoke out at that meeting about this issue. So she will be delighted to know that there is change happening. Let me just remind listeners that I'm talking with Mary Jo Kreitzer. Dr. Kreitzer is the director of the Center for Spirituality and Healing and a professor of nursing at the University of Minnesota. She's also co-editor-in-chief of the three-year-old publication called Global Advances in Health and
Medicine.
And so she's talking with us today about this journal. I thought it would be of interest to a number of our listeners. And, you know, you mentioned about the issue of complementary and integrating care. And there is in the March issue of the journal, this is the piece by, I believe it's John Weeks, where he's talking about the new Joint Commission is the Joint Commission for Accreditation of Hospitals and Healthcare Organizations, and it accredits hospitals and healthcare organizations. It sets standards, and, you know, these organizations have to try to meet the standards, and that it's calling the Joint Commission, as it's called, it's shorthand, is calling for never opioids only. Never only opioids, that's what he says. And the idea that if you're giving somebody, if somebody needs an opioid, that shouldn't be all that they're getting, right?
That's exactly right, Diana. And the new Joint Commission regulations actually really nudge hospitals in a very strong way to be using non-pharmacologic approaches. And so that is really, really huge because it's opening the door and saying, you know, it's not just about offering a pharmacologic intervention. So there's probably 10 other things that you could be doing to help ease people's pain. And so it really is putting in place a requirement that you begin to offer non-pharmacologic approaches. Now, I was really excited about that because one of the other real interests I have is integrative nursing. And I have published a book last year, Integrative Nursing by Oxford University Press. And there are principles of integrative nursing, six principles. And one of the principles is that we always, when we're dealing with symptoms, pain, anxiety, nausea, confusion, fatigue, as nurses, we should always move from less intensive invasive approaches to more, depending on the patient's need or context. And when you think of you know, patients that are hospitalized today and nurses and nursing care, often the first course is to look for technology or drugs.
Yeah.
And really, when you really think of the art and the science, the exquisiteness of nursing, it's often using those other approaches that have been in our repertoire for centuries. So I'm excited about that.
And yet, so the argument about that will be that these other therapies take more time. And it's so easy to give somebody a pill or to bring in some technology rather than sitting with the patient doing acupressure point or doing some guided imagery. So what do you say about that?
You know what I say, Diana, and I get that question often, is that, you know what, it's yes and it's no. So if you have a patient that is nauseated and, you know, you could go to the drug cabinet and get a drug, it doesn't take any more time to go and get some aromatherapy. A lot of evidence that aromatherapy can be very effective. If you're actually changing a patient's dressing or doing a painful procedure, it doesn't take time to say to that patient, let's begin with some slow, deep breathing. And I just really want to work with you. Think about a place that you like to be and that is relaxing and refreshing for you. That doesn't take more time. In fact, it may take less time because if your patient relaxes, it may be easier to do whatever the, you know, painful test or procedure is. So there are some things that don't take more time. Yeah. Yes, you can't do a 20 or 30 minute Reiki treatment in the busy shift when you're caring for six or seven other patients. But I think there's so much that we can do in just our daily course of work as nurses.
So do you see a day when... So palliative care is on the rise, and palliative care is symptom management. And many hospitals now have a department of palliative care. Do you see a day when, indeed, when I'm having that, I'm having pain and you know, we're going to prescribe opioids, but automatically I'm going to call in a palliative care team, and it will include people who know how to do acupuncture, and that this will be paid for somehow?
I do think that day is coming. I mean, I think part of the change that's happening as a result of the Affordable Care Act being passed, and we're not there right now, but there's more and more discussion, Diana, instead of doing the fee-for-service that we're accustomed to pay more for outcomes.
Yes.
And it's sometimes called value-based care. And under an outcome payment orientation, it becomes less relevant who does what. You just want to make sure the outcome is the best it can be. So taking an example in an outpatient setting, if you have a patient with a chronic condition or somebody with diabetes, it's not all about just having the physician look at the diagnostic tests and make changes, because you really recognize somebody that's living with diabetes, oh my goodness, there's a lot about nutrition and there's a lot about exercise, and it might make a lot of sense to bring in a health coach and to bring in a nutritionist. And if you can get a better outcome because you have a team engaged, there's going to be an incentive to do that. So we're in the middle of a big mix right now. We're not there yet, but that's the direction we're going.
Yes. Now, you also have poetry.
We do. So, you know, in addition to having the scientific articles that are the core of the journal and the viewpoints and the In My Own Words, I really wanted to add an aesthetic of beauty and literature, you know, art. And so each month we actually, and we invite our readers, Diana, to submit poems. And it could be a poetry about a patient. It could be a poetry about professional practice. And there we also invite people to submit images, and we're interested in images of healing. Mm. And so in the January issue, there's a beautiful image from a wonderful documentary that came out that I know you're familiar with, called The American Nurse. And this is a picture of a sister, Sister Stephen, who's gently leaning over and kissing a dying patient. Mm. And that's the image of healing. Mm. And the poem that we included in this issue, I don't know if you'd like me to read it. It's a fairly short poem.
Lovely.
This poem was actually titled On Nursing, and it's written by a physician. So I thought that was an interesting perspective.
Yes.
Things are different now. The season of illness has come, and life's blameless mirror no longer reflects your health and confidence of yesterday and before. All is cracked and splintered. The painful shards of truth pierce you from all sides. Diagnosis is made, then treatment begun. The doctor has prodded and nodded and left for the night. Only the nurse is at hand to help engage the darkness. A gentle touch is balm to your fear and pain. There is need for sitting and listening and caring before helping you turn and covering you with drowsiness. The memory of your fissured image in a troubled glass becomes opaque for a time with darkness and sleep. The nurse will be there. The night watch is secure.
Lovely. So people who are poets in our audience and have a poem related to health or healthcare might want to submit that through your website?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that website again is gahmj.com. gahmj.com. So who's publishing the journal?
Well, it's a privately owned journal, so it's not owned by one of the large publishing houses. And the publisher is a nurse, Diana, Michelle Middleman. And she's a nurse who lives in Boston who has a deep interest in both integrative health and public health and global health. And so she co-founded the journal, and so she is actually the CEO of the journal right now.
Yeah.
So we have a really wonderful leadership team. I'm the co-editor-in-chief with a physician, Rob Saper, who's at Boston Medical Center. And I have to say, I really am enjoying just the balance that we bring.
Yeah.
So physician, nurse, male, female.
Mm-hmm. East Coast, Midwest.
Yeah. And, you know, many people have asked me, why did you decide to do this? I mean, at the stage that you're in your career, why step into, it's kind of a big job, you know, agreeing to become co-editor of a journal. And I tell you, I'm enjoying so much being able to help elevate issues that I think are important and help curate stories that I think really need to get out. I think it's fun to be part of a very innovative team that is pulling together a different kind of a journal that has art and poetry and scientific articles. And the images on the cover are so beautiful.
Yeah.
They can be on your coffee table.
Yes. Well, it's a remarkable effort, and I think you should be very proud of the work. You've got a stellar, not counting myself, you have a stellar editorial board. A diverse group.
Yes, we really were looking at wanting both the editors and the editorial board to be diverse. And so we, and our editors, we have four editors. One is from Australia, one is from Germany, two are from the United States. And the editorial board, too, is a great mix of physicians and nurses and psychologists and acupuncturists and naturopaths. And so it's quite a diverse group.
And Mary Jo, when people go to the website, will they be able to access the articles in the journal?
Many of the articles are open access, but they're another big feature of the website.
Meaning
so
I'm glad you can open them
open
for free.
Access, and so you can open them for free. But also on the website, we actually are adding a lot of videos.
Oh.
And so one of the new features we're having is that when somebody submits an article, and we invite them to also submit an interview or a video that might be like a demonstration. If it's an article on back exercises, demonstrating how do you do those back exercises. So in a couple of weeks, we're going to be in Iceland. And so there's the first International Integrative Nursing Symposium in Iceland. So we have nurses coming from 12 different countries to kind of look at these integrative approaches. We're going to do a lot of interviews there. And those interviews will be up on the website.
Great.
Rob, at the same time I'm in Iceland, is going to be in Korea. And so he will be harvesting stories out of Korea.
Great. So those will be open for will be open access.
Completely open access. John Weeks, who you mentioned, who is a wonderful policy analyst, He actually is writing a global integrator. Many people are familiar with the web-based integrator that he does, like as a kind of a blog. But on the Global Advances website, he does an integrator that's global. And so he brings top stories from all around the world.
And in the journal, you have various people reviewing other papers that come out in other journals, as well as book reviews.
Yeah, we actually feel, Diana, we want the journal to be a go-to place. And so we want to be telling the stories not only that are published in our journal, but if there's a big article that comes out in a journal like American Journal of Nursing or in Science or in Nature or the Journal of the American Medical Association, we want to do a synopsis of that and get that out to our readers as well.
Well, it's I think an excellent effort, and I'm pleased to be associated with it, Mary Jo. And I'm really appreciative that you came on HealthStyles today to talk about it. And we've talked, so our listeners know, about periodically on HealthStyles on a regular basis, actually interviewing somebody who's got a paper in the journal and trying to bring that content to you in another way as well. So that is very exciting.
Yeah, we're excited about that too.
Good,
Thank you very
good.
much.
Yes. So we've been talking with Dr. Mary Jo Kreitzer, Director of the Center for Spirituality and Healing and a Professor of Nursing at the University of Minnesota. And she's the co-editor-in-chief of Global Advances in Health and Medicine. You can find out more about this publication by going to www.gahmj.com. That stands for Global Advances in Medicine, in Health and Medicine Journal.com, GAHMJ.com. Thank you, Mary Jo. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us online at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. You're listening to Health Styles on WBAI 99.5 FM New York. We'll be right back.